Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be looking at the Billy Meier case today. I wanted to talk, first of all, a little bit about creation. Creation is the universal consciousness of our universe. Our universe is called the Dern Universe, D-E-R-N, in the Meier material. It was created 46 trillion years ago in a Big Bang, and it has been expanding ever since. Now, the universal consciousness is not a father or some personification, as it's been described by the religions of our world today. Instead, it's a neutral, positive entity. It really has no personality. I like to make the analogy of our sun, which radiates light and heat, yet it has no personality. It really allows for the life to exist on our world. The heat from the sun and the light from the sun, yet it really doesn't show any favorites. It's not in a personal relationship with you. It just radiates light and heat because of what it is. And in a way, the universal consciousness is like that. It is neither good nor evil. It radiates love. And love is the highest principle in creation. And everything follows that principle in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal. Only man can turn away from love. You know, love is one of the creational natural laws. And these laws of creation are not commandments, but they are laws that you have to follow or you'll run into problems. It's like if you violate the law of gravity under certain conditions, you can run into big problems. And that's the way the laws of creation are. Same with the law of striving. We have to continually strive. That's one of the laws of creation. We have to continually work to improve ourselves. If you don't, you'll run into problems and you'll have suffering in your life. Another one of these laws is the law of the bipolar structural composition of everything that lives. You know, there's a positive and negative pole on a battery, and the atoms have a certain... particles have a positive charge and certain particles have a negative charge, and that's kind of the way life works. I have another couple callers I'm going to let in. First, I will bring Eve on, and I think 949 is Nate. How are you guys today?
Good. Can you hear me right well?
Yes. Yeah. Sound good. Nate, are you there?
Yeah. How you guys doing?
I'm doing okay. How has the have you both been seeing each other at Munn's Park?
I couldn't make it out this month. Work got too crazy.
Do you know a guy named Douglas? He just moved back to Flag.
Douglas.
Yeah, apparently he went to the meetings before. He's just moved back there, and he's doing some really interesting stuff with water.
I think I met him. I think he came to the earlier meetings, right?
I think so, yeah. I wasn't there, but, you know, it seemed to me that he was at earlier meetings. But he was there this last time, and the discussion was pretty much around what he's doing, which is amazing. I wish I could relate, you know.
What was his name again?
Douglas.
Douglas, do you remember his last name?
No.
Okay. Was he coming from out of town?
Well, apparently he lived up there and grew up there, and then he left, and now he's come back, and he inherited some land, family land. that's got a house on there, and then they're going to, he's got a lab set up, and he's doing all these lab work on these ideas around collecting water and energy, kind of almost Tesla-like stuff.
Nate, have you met this guy?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to see if he signed up for a shirt or not.
He's a nice guy, and I guess he's back for good. In fact, Deborah and Poppy are up there today. Are up at his lab to see, you know, to learn more about what he's doing. He's doing some really far out stuff.
Like that old, I guess it's Professor Yamamoto was doing with the thoughts, water, stuff like that, or?
No, more like collecting water from the air, and, you know, I just can't get into it. You're going to have to. I'm sure he's going to be up there this next month, and you're going to have you're going to have to go up to his lab.
Okay, so okay, cool. That's like a cliffhanger.
Yeah. I wish that I could. I bet you if you talk to Michael or Deborah could explain it more, because she's been up there now a couple of times since the meeting to learn more.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There was one fellow that I don't know if you guys ever heard of, but his name is Colonel Thomas Bearden, and he's a very intelligent scientist, and he wrote a book about pulling energy from the vacuum. And I know there's a lot of people that think that may be nonsense, but he's always sounded legitimate to me. And
well, you know, that's very, very similar sounding to what this guy's doing as well.
I figured it might be.
Yeah. But I think that it's, you know, I wish that I could talk about it. I mean, it was just, there was so much, you know. That couldn't retain all the details.
Well, let me read something from this website here, www.chenierre.org. There's enough energy inside the space in a coffee cup to boil all the oceans in the world. This is a fact well known to the scientific community and was, for example, a favorite quote of Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman. So, and there's this process in science called broken symmetry, where they are able to supposedly pull energy from space itself, which I've always found to be even fascinating.
I'm glad I didn't know his last name, because to tell you the truth, I think this guy wants to kind of remain, you know, under the wire. I think that some of the stuff, it's almost like I got the feeling like, yeah, you know, don't be spreading this around. I mean, you could get yourself in trouble with that far out.
Okay, I think I know Douglas. I thought he was a Mormon guy.
I know. I don't know anything about him. This is the first time I ever even knew that he existed or met him.
Is he kind of tall and skinny, sort of?
Thin, yeah, he's got kind of, you know, he's got, I don't know how old he would be, maybe in his late 40s, 50s. He's got a son. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, okay,
I'm sure that he'll be up there hopefully this next time too.
He came with some really good devices, the water that you could make electricity out of, or he was separating water with these devices. And one tube, I think, he was creating spirulina, and the other tube he was creating the opposite of spirulina, which is axanthin. And he was talking about how you could just live in, if you're in a cave, you could just live off of water because you can, both of these things are edible, and they grow at an extremely quick rate when you turn this machine on, as he was showing us. And this was like, I think my second meeting there or first meeting there, I met him. And then
how many years have you been going up there?
Huh?
How many years have you been going up there?
Me?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I was in at the second meeting they had at Deborah's house.
Uh-huh.
So I was seeing it on Michael's main website, but I just had a feeling I didn't want to go yet, but I was trying to build up, and I guess things fell apart during the first one, and then the second meeting and stuff, and so that was really a good experience.
Well, he's back.
Yeah, I wanted to do some filming of him when he was explaining. Did he do like a presentation for everybody?
No, not really. He just apparently, I think that he's just pretty much kind of arrived back, and he had emailed Michael, and Michael said there's a meeting, and he dropped everything and came over. Kind of thing, but he might be doing a presentation.
Yeah, I hope he does, because when the stuff he has to show is really, really, it's really interesting.
Yeah, it was fascinating, and so you know, I would talk to Deborah. Like I said, she's up there today at his lab. Mm-hmm.
Now, Nate, how far of a drive do you have to Munns Park, Arizona?
It's about 500 miles for me.
Whoa. So what does it take, about 6-7 hours?
Yeah, if I race, it takes me a little under 6 hours. but usually, it's like 6.5 hours usually.
Is it, are both of you guys getting a lot out of those meetings still?
Oh, yeah.
I get a bunch out of it. I mean, there's a reason why I'm driving 500 miles, 6.5 hours for a 4-hour meeting than driving. Maybe I'm stupid or crazy, but I don't think so. I think
that's
a lot.
I understand. I mean, I can understand that, you know, I definitely can. So, I mean, that's 1,000 miles round trip.
Yeah, definitely. And what's interesting is there is a passage in the Way to Live, and I'm going to look for it, but it basically says something that I heard from like the 60s, you know, find the others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Find the others?
Yeah, there's one of the, it's in the early part of the book. I'll see if I can find it and I can read it.
Didn't I point that out to you that time?
You probably did.
The last time that you were out there, I pointed that out. That blew me away. Yeah.
Do you know where it's at?
God, not right off. No. You guys get talking, I'll go look for it.
Okay.
Well,
speaking
of
that book. Oh,
go ahead. Go ahead, Nate.
Speaking of this book, I'm currently working on doing a little excerpt from it, and it's verse number 60, and it really talks about love. And I'm recording it, and I've just found some video I'm splicing together for it, and I'll have it up on YouTube. I thought I would have it earlier today, but as you know, I'm moving, so people are coming through looking at the place to rent. So.
Yeah, so you're right in the middle of You know, I just have this feeling there's a whole lot of changes going on all over the place. I mean, do you know there's like a 4-foot snowstorm that's falling in Colorado right now?
Yeah, that's amazing because, you know, last night you pinged me and then I was reading that their average snowfall and they're supposed to get 55 inches on average. And this almost in 2 days we're talking about, you know, pretty much their year's average.
Their whole year's worth of snow.
Yeah.
And you know that'll probably end up here. It usually comes there and then we'll get, you know, the tail end of that. And I this is exactly the kind of thing that the Meyer information has talked about, this extreme weather.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, when we talk about snow reminds me of something I've heard him say when he was talking. Someone asked, well, what's an ice age like? He's like, well, you go out one day and you start shoveling snow. You go out the next day and you start shoveling snow. And after a while, you go out and you say, I'm not shoveling any more snow.
It's impossible. There's too much. Oh, man. And you live in Southern California, right? So you don't ever have to worry about that.
Yeah, we had some good weather this year. Not down south, but we don't really take water. We don't really have any really big reservoirs here down south. I think we get majority of our stuff from the Colorado River. But up north they got plenty of new renewed snowpacks and the rivers or the lakes that they use for water have refilled, and that's good news. But you know how you were talking about opposites and stuff. We can't sit there and not be proactive in this. You know, we shouldn't be waiting on nature to help facilitate our eventual needs. You know, because it's just a roll of the dice then, especially with this erratic weather. And this also reminds me of how the Mayans, how the Mayan material describes the Mayan civilization and its decline. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this, I'll just do a quick summary. Basically, the Mayan civilization was about 23 million people and strong. And what had happened is a drought hit them, and it was a 13-year-long drought. And during that time, they, you know, yeah, it was crazy, right? So there was not really a way to migrate out of that place, because you can imagine that this drought was going on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles, and to travel out of that place, well, like, you wouldn't know, right? You're like, okay, we'll just migrate. But as you migrate, there's nothing there. So you go the other way, you know, but there's nothing there. So they turned and they turned on each other and they kind of cannibalized the young and the elderly, you know. And then there was a three or five year reprieve where they got rain. So they thought the worst was over. And then, bam, they were hit with another 7 year or 8 year drought, and then another 2 year reprieve, and then another drought. And I don't know exactly those last two on drought durations, but during that time their population went from 23 million to about 3 million.
Wow.
And then so just imagine if the conquistadors had come and there was 23 million people there. Well, they wouldn't have had the most easiest time taking over as they did.
So they came in the at the weakest point. Now, Eve is saying that number 218 in the way to live is the one thing you guys were talking about.
Let's take a look at it, or let me see if I can find it real quick here.
Let me see.
Okay. Oh, this is definitely one.
Are you there, Eve?
Yes.
Okay, was it 218 you were talking about?
Yeah, it says, the clever one never has friends who are not of his, her kind.
Ah. Now, what does that exactly mean to you? Does that mean that a person who's sly and maybe a little dishonest never really has true friends or never has friends that...
No, I think that they could have maybe true friends, but they would have to be sly and dishonest as well.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But that's not what you were talking about, though, right? I mean, what were you guys talking about?
Well, Nate was talking about traveling all that way to come and spend some hours with us.
Oh, yeah. Which is a heck of a sacrifice.
Right. Well, did you say sacrifice?
Yeah.
Oh, no. But I do not look at it at all as a sacrifice.
No.
Definitely not. I think I enjoy the people that are there and their open-mindedness and their willingness to discuss. And not only that, they want to learn. And they want to learn about the spirit, which is, I want to learn about the spirit. I do not want belief systems. I do not want a strict diet of materialism. And it's been taken. It's very hard to find people that are even remotely, open to this stuff. I think at first they look at you as a novelty. You know, if you do start speaking, or they start speaking, then they might have a gem or two of information that they share. But then, for that, that's the end of it. There's no more discussion. There's no more growth there. There's just, okay. And then they quietly go into their not quietly, but subtly go into the ways of telling you to be quiet when you talk about it. Go ahead.
Let me throw something out here, Nate, because sometimes I wonder, is it that people... Sometimes I think it's not that people really disagree with you, and it's not that they don't see wisdom in what you're saying sometimes. I think it's more that they're so concerned about what other people think that they don't want to go there because they want to stay with what the mass of the people are thinking so that they won't have to face any ridicule. Sometimes I think it's really that simple. Have you guys ever thought of it in those terms?
No? Yeah, I think it's just a matter of depth of personality. And, I think for me personally, I was born in just searching, for this kind of thing and did a lot of different things. Went into Buddhism and all of that stuff and, other things, New Age. And finally, the Meyer material, because of you, Mark, came and, I had been looking for.
It wasn't it, though, true? Didn't you say this, and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you say that at first it wasn't the Meyer material? You liked my guitar stuff that I played. I thought that was funny. But eventually your open-mindedness kind of spread. And
it did.
Very, very interesting. Nate, you were going to say something important, I'm sure.
Whatever. It's not that important. I forgot. So I just was going to talk about a little bit about 218 a little bit more. The clever one never has as friends those who are not of his or her kind. And so you ask, what do we mean by this? Because who is of our kind, right? So, for me, what's friend mean here? Because to me, friend has always meant lover. Someone who you would basically be able to share the ways of love with. And I'm not talking about a romantic love, or I'm talking about the effective love, being able to critique someone. And, if your friend's messing up, you say, dude, you're messing up. You can't tell that to anybody, right? So what is friends and kind mean there?
Well, it's interesting we're coming back to love, because this is something that I always seem to gravitate back to in the Meyer material, and this is Love Teaching Letter number 27, page 296. And I think this information, if I remember correctly, is not exactly open to the public completely. I don't think you and I can go buy this book, but I found bits and pieces of this translated. And it says, let me read a little bit. No life is able to exist without love and without the light of truth. However, no light is able to exist without love and truth. And no truth is able to exist without light and love. True love is true being. And it is the everlasting warmth from the center of creation, which is described as true existence. Love is the highest principle of creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual should therefore be aware that he exists only through the love of creation, and that he carries this love also within himself. Creation created everything in love and logic, and put the same love in all of its creatures, so that life itself is love. Now, aren't those just the most profound and beautiful words that, you know, you've ever heard in your life?
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I really enjoy this love letter number 27. And, you know, I quote this a lot when I go through this. When I go through the shows here, and this is one I quote a lot. Each smallest plant, each ever so tiny animal was created in love by creation. Each creation existing according to the same law of love. All life is in the absolute perfection, that which it should be through the love of creation. Now, and listen to this, and then maybe you guys have something you can say about this. And except for humans, every life form lives exactly by this creation's plan. You know, I almost think that the animals, the flora and the fauna, they live according to creation's plan exactly. And only human beings can turn away from love and, you know, do things that otherwise we shouldn't do. Any thoughts on those ideas?
Well, the thing about that is the things that come into my mind is we have to remember that to the large extent, animals are, you know, they're getting the instinctual pulsations of creation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we should be too. We should really be. You know, have you ever heard the term empfinden?
I've heard you talk about it. I've heard people talk about it, yes.
Spiritual perception?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that what it means? Yeah.
Yes.
So that's what they say. So it's interesting you're talking about this because verse number 60 is all about this. And it's
really?
A way of putting it. Yeah, it's a way of putting it. And what caught my eye was the word threshing. So in that, in the way to live, it talks about how love, if you learn how to see it, what it's actually doing, let me find it really quick. And, there's this one part I think that is just, really awesome, but go ahead while I look for it.
Okay, let me read the beginning of it while you're looking for it. And then you can chime in wherever you feel motivated to chime in. When the human being falls in love, then he/she shall give it free rein, as he or she does when he or she falls in love, when it beckons to him or her. The ways of love are often hard touchstones of the life, quite often difficult and steep. But if the human being is enveloped in a breath thin tissue of the love, then may he or she devote himself or herself to it and preserve it. He/she shall not pay attention to the blades of the swords and the thorns of the bushes. which hem the love's wayside and try to injure the breath which surges with the love. The human being shall not pay attention to the possible wounds which can be thereby torn. Rather, he or she shall understand and recognize only the love and know about it. The true love is strong and is even able to destroy dreams and shatter wishes. Just as the icy north wind withers the blossoms, because just as the love crowns the human being, it also tortures him slash her. And the love tortures because inherent to it are renunciation and demands. And I think it's talking about the false love here, which the Meyer material discusses, the affective love. And the love crowns the human being, it also tortures him or slash her. So these passages that I'm reading in these various places, the ones I usually pick out, are talking about the wisdom conditioned love that's more like the light and the warmth that comes from the sun, that's rather than the romantic love, which can turn into anger and rage. And the love that the incredible splendor of nature, which is the visible expression of the love of creation, that is not romantic love. That's a much, much higher love. Nate, did you find your passage?
Gosh, no. I was trying to, you know, multitasking is not my strong suit, so I'm listening. So basically, it talks about towards the end, it talks about realizing that what has happened is where the human gets their pain from is their misinterpretation of love, their misunderstanding of what love is. And they that's what love does, is it will correct you. And on a constant thing. And so it talks about this: one moment you're on cloud nine, the next you're, Skid Row or whatever.
On drugs, right?
Right.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I had a little bit highlighted here. Let me read just a sentence or two. Unfortunately, the human being often searches for love out of anxiety, or to find calmness, pleasure, or gratification. However, this is the wrong way and a wrong form of love, which is only artificially created in order to fulfill emotional or lustful wishes. So that's kind of what you're talking about, I think. The false love? Go ahead.
Right. So creation is this love that is ever... ever balancing us towards helping us balance ourselves towards a neutral, positive state, you know, like itself. Because even in this, love does not, it says, so true love is a concentrated form of the fine spiritual perception and is not built upon emotions. Because truthfully, it is a fine spiritual perception itself. Therefore, love itself is only power, and it never takes anything which would not be of itself. Mm-hmm. So the moment you fall out of love, it will seek to rebalance you and stuff. And then you will have strife and other things and toil because the way you're thinking about it.
So in other words, true love, if you kind of break it down, no matter... you know, how true love is anything and everything that exists.
Yes, wow. I would say.
Now that is a profound statement. I'd have to sit and think about that. Nothing exists. How does that go? There's one passage in How It All Began. It says, the infinite love of creation connects all life because in all life, that love lies hidden. So there is that love in all life.
So the fact that anything exists, But, you know, that's really hard to take in because, I mean, you know, you look at some of the acts and the things that people do in this world that are just so horrific.
Yeah, but I wonder if those horrific acts are not part of, it's not what we're talking about here.
That's true.
You know
what
I'm saying? Because creation is the source of love. And I think the work of creation is perfect in that sense. And we're so lucky to be on this planet. My goodness. You know, this planet is like a garden. It's just incredibly beautiful. And, of course, because of our overpopulation and because of our confusion, we're destroying things. You know, that's why every one of us that listens to this material has to continue to talk about this, because it really is the only thing that's going to stop this insanity that we're rushing headlong to our own destruction. And you know, one thing Spoth told Billy was that the big problem with Earth humans is that they don't understand what the creation is. And I'm at least working on trying to understand it. You know, I don't say that I understand.
I think that there is a way of talking about what creation is in words. I don't think that there is a concept that we could even get to.
I think it depends on the audience when you talk about that, because there's some people that seem to get it. There's other people that seem to not get it, and there's even other people that are just, they're very what's the word, obtuse. So they're very slow in getting it, and what they do is oftentimes they'll defend their position as if they're under attack.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to constantly remind you, I'm not attacking you. I'm just, you know, trying to say something from my point of view, but not to belittle you in your understanding, your current state of knowledge or your wisdom.
Well, you know, one thing I'd like to discuss with both of you is a term that I have been thinking about for several years, and the Meyer Information uses it and calls it a Wesenheiten. You know, and it refers to the creation as a Wesenheiten. I'll read the definition of that. Wesenheiten noun, plural Wesenheiten. An immaterial or material existence form without a self-determining possibility of evolution. Now, it's talking about the creation of universal consciousness here, that it doesn't have a self-determining possibility of evolution. But I think you and I, as Wesen, do have a self-determining possibility. In other words, I think that we can take, for example, anywhere from 40 to 60 million years to get to that sixth stage of evolution. But I think the creation follows some fixed plan in terms of its evolution. Had you thought of it that way, Nate? Either one of you, if you can comment at all.
So yeah, the Wesenheiten is the reason why a human can be illogical, you know, and an animal in nature cannot be, or a plant cannot be, or a rock cannot be.
Well, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought of it in that way. But one of the profound things about the idea of creation and universal consciousness, which stretches my mind, is that it's an impersonal spiritual energy. That it radiates love, but it doesn't have a personality. And the best analogy I can think of is the sun. Think of the beautiful yellow sun on a blue sky day. And that warmth and that heat, it literally gives life to the whole planet. But it doesn't do it because of its personality, because of its...
Are you sure?
Do you understand? Do you get what I'm saying here, Eve? Any comments? Thoughts?
No, not really.
Okay.
So, yeah, I can stuff like this to kind of what you kind of talked about a little bit earlier in the show. You were talking about gravity, how gravity, and I always use this when I'm trying to get people to understand that the way to think about reality, you know, especially religious people, to try to get their mind away from the idea of a father god or a godfather or whatever it is.
Sky daddy.
Sky daddy. And when it comes down to it, I give them little scenarios. I go, you know, imagine the most evilest person you could think of that did the most horrendous crime ever, and they walk over a cliff because they're not watching where they're going, right? And, you know, gravity would treat them the exact same as it would a person, you know, that had just given their last dollar to charity and helped some people cross the street that were blind or something, whatever. Just think of a really good deed, you know, and gravity is going to treat them the exact same. I said that's like creation. Now, and then you have to, you know, relate it to the person. Say, well, in each of us is this garden, you know, and it allows us to grow things. And at every second and every moment, we're growing something. And those things can be called muscles or virtues or anything, but they're very they're very subjective, and they're things you can rely on and stuff. And so, like, that area is also set up in this neutral sense, that it, if you put something into it, like a very positive affirmation, you know, the, like the 77 balancing meditations for a positive mental attitude, and you construct these plants, you can always fall back in your head on these things, and it shines through in your personality and how you live your day-to-day life, you know, moment by moment. Likewise, if you start thinking about hatred of the next person and or jealousy or greed, and you feed that animal or that, not that animal, but that plant, and you plant that in your garden, well, you will have that instantly to fall back on. And perhaps when we were talking a little bit earlier about of his or her kind, this is what mostly it meant.
I had an interesting run-in today with gravity. It's interesting you should bring this up. You're talking about the creational natural law of gravity that affects all of us equally regarding regardless of who we are. One of my cats, I call him Oreo, black and white cat. This was one of the cats born in our garage last year. He's just a great cat, okay? But all of them, and this is nature's programming, I'm starting to see this now, cats are programmed to live dangerously. They climb trees, and they go way up trees, and they can barely get themselves down. They like to walk on the ledges of things. And this little crazy guy was, this balcony is like 12 feet up, maybe higher, I don't know. And he's walking, and there's a rail, okay? He's walking on the other side of the rail, a little space about an inch wide or 2 inches wide. And all of a sudden, I can see him frantically scratching because he's falling. So I run over and I reach my hand through the railing and I pull him against the railing so he doesn't fall off the balcony. And I don't know what to do yet at this point. I mean, I've saved him from falling, but I don't know how to get him up over the railing. But thank God he just, thank creation, if you will, that he just squeezed himself through the rails. I didn't think he would even fit. But it just made me think of, you know, the programming of nature. I mean, these guys are programmed to do this sort of thing. There's no way. I mean, they're just going to do it. It's just so. I mean, and it's like gravity, like you said, it is completely impersonal. It, you know, it's a law. So, for example, here are some of the laws of creation. The structure of the seven belts of the universe, that's a law. the formation, the creation of new spirit forms during the universe's expansion phase. So there are new spirit forms coming into the universe right now while the universe is expanding. Another law of creation, the existence of love, as we were talking about, the highest form of universal love. We're talking about universal love here, not romantic love. Another law of creation is striving, the fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no life. As soon as you cut back too far in your striving, believe me, suffering will enter your life. And there's also a bipolar structure composition of everything that exists. And that would be the positive and the negative. The positive and the negative of a thinking. There's a positive and negative charge on a battery. There's positive and negative in the atomic world. So I just wanted to throw that out. That these are the laws of creation, which are different than the commandments. Actually, isn't that true, Nate? The commandments come down from the Patali level, but really creation doesn't give us commands. Any comments, Nate?
Yeah, that is a...
Still there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you kind of went quiet. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just talking about the commandments. It's interesting. But let's just look at it like, so now my mind's all over the place. So commandments right now, there's according to the information, there were originally 12 commandments, that got cut to 10. And there were more like, they're kind of like, okay, I don't know. Is using the word commandments even right for the stuff that's written down? And what does command even mean? Because it's just like gravity. It tells you what it is, and it lets you decide what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's better to call the laws of nature laws. And the 12 commandments.
Recommendations.
Well, that's a good way to put
it. Yes, rules, laws, and recommendations. and I try to think about how I could describe each one differently. What would be a rule, what would be a law, and what would be a recommendation? Hey, and by the way, if you want to build a house, build your house on rock, build it outside of a floodplain. You know, build it where there's no fault line. There's no that might be a recommendation, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to use specific examples because of the way our mind works.
Nate, you're breaking up.
Am I still breaking up?
Yeah. Okay. You're better now. Did you move?
Okay. No, I just threw the phone really near my mouth, so maybe that's what's going on.
It's like talking,
I get comfortable, I guess. So, where did I leave off at? Building a house? Did you guys hear that part?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So maybe that's a recommendation. Rules and laws. So law, to me, a law is something that can't be broken. So the law of death, for example. Once the spirit leaves the body, you can't bring it back, right? The real death,
right.
The true death, right? Maybe
right.
That would be a law, right? And a rule. What would be a good example of a rule that you guys could think of that doesn't fall inside of a recommendation, and doesn't fall inside of a law? So I think
here's one: you shall not bear false witness against the truth, creation, and life. That's a rule, but you could break it.
Yeah. And so when you start breaking stuff like that, it just leads you to a path of degeneracy. A recommendation, you may, in this life, get out of the life without, if you build your house in a floodplain, if you build your house near a volcano, if you build your house near a fault line, you may get out of life without ever having to bear the responsibility of your actions, you know, or the consequences of your actions. So maybe that's what it means. And maybe
the rules are
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No. Continue.
No, so I was just summarizing. And so then maybe rules are, you know, choices that you would continually make that would lead you into a degeneracy, a path of what's the word that they use in the Maya material. You know, it just means to degenerate, but not in the physical form. It means to mentally degenerate.
Well, to get out of control of the good human nature, Asgartit or Asgartit?
Maybe that's it. And then the laws would be things you just can't fix. This is how things are, and then they're, you know, recognize. You better recognize, right?
You know, one of the things that I've been pondering and trying to understand a little bit more is the fact that the circumstances of our life arise out of our thoughts. And what's got me just really pondering this is that I know there are things, there are circumstances in my life that I wish they weren't that way. You know what I'm saying? And so there must be a lot more thinking that I'm putting out that I'm aware of. That there must be unconscious thoughts, subconscious thoughts, and it's like the decision you said of the person that builds their house on, you know, on a floodplain. You know, so the circumstances of that life, if the house is flooded, do arise out of his thoughts, because back when he was building that house, he ignored it, or he decided he was going to take a chance, but you know, sometimes in life it's hard to see in the future. And it's hard always to make those, you know, right determinations. But even, you know, so you can have a bad circumstance a year or two or three years later based on things that arose out of your thoughts the two or three years prior. So, you know, it's we think of it in terms of, okay, I'm thinking this thought right now, so I'll snap my fingers and reality is going to change. And then sometimes I don't think it quite works that way.
Think of the people that argue for something that is bad, you know, smoking, for example. Just the mentality that goes into a lot of that. Well, a lot of them go, well, it's not harming me right now. And this is the same thing when it comes to like drinking and really a lifestyle kind of like that. I can't think of a word to describe it, but I oftentimes, when I'm trying to help someone, you know, see so that they can correct, they will come back on that argument and say, well, I don't see this happening right now. I don't see this happening right now. I did this and this didn't happen right now. And I said, you know, but what you're doing is the same thing as smoking, or what smokers do. Smokers don't immediately get cancer when they have a cigarette, right?
Well, I wanted to throw something out here kind of along what you're saying. And this is one of my addictions that I'm struggling with, and it's electronic media. And, there's so many things in this crazy world of ours that can cause you trouble. And I know there are times when here I am zoning out in front of this YouTube video, and I know myself, I'm telling myself, you know, you're frying your brain right now. You really need to stop. But I don't stop. So go ahead, Nate. I wanted you to finish that thought, because I want to read a little bit, too, about Contact 542, and since we're running out of time, but go ahead and finish your thought there.
I think I was pretty much done, but yeah, electronic media is extremely dangerous, and it really needs to be brought into a place of balance. And I'm not telling people to completely stop it. It just, there really needs to be balance. And I think one of the things you can look at as evidence for this unbalance is, both of you and I, Mark, we work in the engineering field.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened is, if we look back in history, the U.S. was one of the first countries to set out among all other countries with the media blitz, the oversaturation of, you know, moving pictures, movies and television and computers and personal computers and cell phones and smartphones. And you see the quality of education we have because of it. And we see a lack of engineering coming from here. So what we do is we look at other countries who have good engineers and we bring them over here. But if you look at the history of those countries, they didn't have that this constant barrage of media. No.
This is very true, very, very profound statements that you're saying here. And Contact Report 542 kind of lays the groundwork about electronic media. And then 543 is where it gets really intense about telling us how dangerous this is. Let me read a little bit here. Electronic texts, which are also pre-existing among us playarons, naturally in much higher developed forms, serve solely and exclusively for the dissemination of information as well as for communication. Contrary to this, we have bookworks, however, that do not consist of paper and cardboard covers, but of uncorruptible artificial materials which are not inscribed in the form of the printing process, but in a form that has the resemblance of a photographic technique. These artificial material for bookworks are, as said, uncorruptible, and the bookworks find great popularity among our populations and therefore frequent use. In particular, since we are permitted to have your paper and your books, your educational works, these have been actually found dissemination in great measure. And it goes on here and it talks about electronic books. Electronic books are not made out of it, except in the mode that they, with teachings through the spirit guides, are reproduced in the appropriate mode on large surfaces suitable for all reading, for all listeners, and the listener can be explained. Otherwise, however, no electronic books and literary works are produced and therefore not used, because the whole of an electronic book form has a cold and impersonal effect on the reader. That's the first thing that they say when they're laying the groundwork. So there's this cold and impersonal effect that we get out of electronic books. And then it goes on. Consequently, no valuable connection to the book contents, and therefore also no eventual participation with the contents, can be established. You know, I mean, it's true. When I look here at the book, I think it's The Might of Thoughts, I immediately have this sense of feeling of kind of this calm and this connection with this material. But you don't feel that with electronic stuff. Let me continue. The whole effect of the electronic contents on the reader is thus impersonal and unactive. Consequently, deep-reaching impulsations fail to appear. The electronic book or journal contents acts as banal phrases, stiffness, without warmth, and as restrictions, malfunctions, and unfamiliar characteristics, quirks, and even absurdities, etc., because no internal connection can result from it, and everything is active like a cold foreign body. So we can pick up a little bit more on this next time. So any closing thoughts on electronic material, Nate or Eve? You can go first, Nate, if you're still there. Electronic books?
I have been thinking about this, and I do think that it is very true. What contract is this?
It's 542.
Uh-huh.
Have you been thinking about this, Eve?
I have, yes.
I have been thinking about it a lot, and it's a tremendous. It's one of my my weaknesses. I recognize this as one of my weaknesses, and it's something that I think is a problem that I'm trying to work through. And I'm not sure exactly what the solution is. I mean, other than to cut down as much as possible.
Well, I think what you can do. I think when you read on a digital screen, you're just reading. I think when you're reading in a book, when you're holding the book, there is a level of you're thinking about what you're reading.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on a different level. You're thinking, I think that electronic type seems to, you're just reading it and you're taking it as to truth or something, you know, right then. But when you're reading in a book, you're discovering in yourself if you agree or not. You're thinking about what you're reading on your own personal decision on how you feel about what you're reading.
I think those are good words. I think you made some very good points there. There's even an emotional connection, I think, to the books. It evokes a kind of feeling, a kind of point of view. Like when I look at the Might of Thoughts book or the Way to Live book, immediately I feel, you know, this sense of peace or this comfort or something along those lines that kind of...
That's because you've been putting in your fine spiritual matter or whatever you call it into the pages and the object itself.
Isn't that interesting?
So there's a connection there with the book itself or the paper that you're reading or whatever you have. I think Nate could explain it better.
Is he still there, Nate? Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I would just say this. You're not supposed to passively live. And electronic media is a passive form of living.
Mm-hmm.
There's no... And take that wherever you want to go with it, but, you know, you're supposed to be engaging, whatever it is. And this is true at all levels. For your happiness, you have to engage it. For your knowledge, you have to engage it. You know, for your understanding, you have to engage it. For your experience, you have to engage it. You know, because life is not a spectator thing.
Wow. I couldn't have said it better. I think that's a fantastic way to end the show. Thanks, Nate. Thanks, Eve, for joining me this afternoon. I really enjoyed the company and enjoyed the discussion. Folks, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics, and get a hold of this Meyer material. It doesn't get any better than that. We'll talk to you next week.